Hello, Carm here, and welcome to episode 406. Now, welcome to the third installment of the episodic series we call Geek Talk 2.0. We'll be talking about who are the independent shop's biggest competitors, and what do we need to do when it comes to advertising and promoting independent shops. Now, here's a taste.
When I said, in all complete and 100% honesty, that my shop and my guys are better than the dealership. I've got everybody ASC certified, that my shop, I train more than them, that we're more on top of technology than them. And she got offended. She got offended by me making that statement. And she said, are you seriously telling me that your shop is as good as the dealership? And I said, no, ma'am, I'm telling you it's better.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, Carm here. Now, don't forget about the impact that the Town Hall Academy is having on the industry. We take a trending topic with a panel of aftermarket professionals like you, and we have an open discussion that exposes the depths of our topic. We do it live every Friday at 12 noon Eastern, but don't worry if you miss it. You can catch the podcast and video replay every Wednesday as we repurpose the audio and video. Now, that means it's always available to you on your favorite listening app. And I hope you are learning something new each and every time you invest your time with the Aftermarket's premier podcast. Hey, did you know that some of the very best shop owner and technician training takes place at Apex? And because of that, plan to be there November 5th through the 7th at the Sands Expo in Las Vegas. I'll be there and I look forward to seeing you. For information, visit AAPEXShow.com. Now, as we continue the Geek 2.0 series here in Part 3, we lay up the 600-pound gorilla in the room. With me is Greg Buckley, CEO of Buckley's Personalized Auto Care in Wilmington, Delaware. Chris Clodier, co-owner of Golden Rule Auto Care in Dallas, Texas, and CEO of Auto Text Me. And Karim Morsley, owner of Winkler Automotive in Gaithersburg, Maryland. These remarkable leaders educate us about dealer competition and advertising to your customer. They share important stats that show how market share is changing. These guys keep a 360-degree eye view of what's essential in marketing, technology, and what it takes to compete. Find this episode's talking points, my guests' bios, at remarkableresults.biz/E406. Now, get ready to listen to learn just one thing. Hey, welcome to Geek Talk 2.0 Part 3. So glad to have everyone here, Greg Buckley, Karim Morsel, and Chris Clodier. If there's any episode in 2019 you need to listen to, if you're steering your business to fruits and rewards, this is the one.
Yes, I would say yeah, we got some good content here.
We're going to lay some stuff out here. Karim, bring this to me, babe. What do you got?
Well, I came across a very interesting market study. I'm all about market studies, especially towards the end of the year. Like you said, I like to be able to know where I'm going to steer the ship. And this one was very interesting. It was done from, you know, for the dealerships, setting the stage for them and giving them an understanding of where they stand vis-a-vis of their customers in terms of perception. And but more importantly, also, you know, how they fare against us, the independent sector, the independent repair shop.
And this was a study that was done for the dealers to give them an outlook as to who their competition is and what advantages they may have.
Correct. Yeah. As far as I know, that's the audience. You know, I was very happy to be able to go through it. And I thought, wow, some very, very eye-opening numbers. A lot of it is confirmation of what we've known for a few years, except it gives it some real hard numbers. And I think the towards the end of that presentation, and we'll amply talk about this, I think, is what it means to us because of the importance of technology for shops, independent shops in particular, to make sure that we stay relevant. I think that's the biggest one yet. We know we've won the fight, or, you know, when it comes to better customer service, better attention to details, faster service, et cetera, better pricing. But I think we have to be very careful about the technology dimension, which could really steer customers back to the dealership despite all the good, you know, all the other good benefits we may offer based on perception.
What he's saying, Chris, is that there may be a kink in the armor if we don't do something about it.
Absolutely. We have no competition. We're in the independent market, so we're all friends. But I believe the dealership, and always have been, is one of our biggest competitors. Look, they have money. They have structure to their organizations. And that's one thing that I think a lot of us don't realize is, you know, we have our owner, and then we've got a couple service writers, we have a couple techs. Dealerships have organization. They have guys with degrees that are a lot smarter than me, and they're running themselves as an organization. Now, we have the ability to shift and move as independents, but they have a lot of knowledge and wealth in those structures that they build. And I think that we can't ignore that. And as to Kareem's point, this slide that we're about to talk about, I think it proves you've got some money to be able to put together some sort of study like this. And that's where dealerships do. They have the intelligence and structure to be able to do a lot of these things. And we need to be aware of that.
So tell us, what's the slide say?
So I think one of the first content I would like to go to before we go to, you know, is to confirm for everyone out there who's still skeptical about the intent of the dealerships and their service departments to come after us. In terms of repair, which is what we are going after more than maintenance, in terms of repair, if we're looking at that number, the dealerships between 2015 and 2018 went from 27% market share to 30. And we went from 33% market share to 30. We are now tied. We're at that point, at that crossover point where this keeps going because of the trend that we're on, and we're going to be, you know, we're going to be below the dealerships. As far as maintenance goes, which is something that we've also pushed hard as independent shops, we've held steady at 23% market share, where the dealerships have actually increased their market share at the expense of the quick lube market. So the Jiffy Lubes and the Midases and all that have gotten a hit, and basically they lost 3% to the dealerships. So no matter how you slice and dice it, the dealerships mean business. They're coming after repair and maintenance in equal effort with very impressive results, if you ask me. So that's for all those out there who may still be debating whether or not, you know, we should be worried about the dealerships. My response to that is an emphatic yes. Be very worried. Be very worried. They're not wasting their money. Like Chris said, they're organizations with structure and money and the wherewithal to understand we need to make money. The average profit per car sold by a dealership fell from 4.7%, I believe, to about 2.5% in 3 years. They know they've got to make up that money somewhere. I mean, look at who owns dealerships. There's a very important, very rich people. They're not going to stand by idly just not making money on their investment. So we got to think about that.
I look at a couple of things that, you know, kind of, yes, we all have to worry about what's happening in the dealer world. Yes, like Chris says, we all have competitors, whether they are independent, fellow independents, the quick lubes, the chains, and or the dealers. I think there's some factors here that interest me, and they may run counter to a few things. And looking at the situation where we had exceptionally amount of high volume sales for three straight years, you know, 17.5 million. So we're going to have a higher pool of vehicles that the dealers are going to work on just naturally within warranty. You know, even the information we have here, 6 in 10 people with a current warranty will go back to the dealer. With an expired warranty, only 3 in 10 go back. Basically, some of the reasons why they don't go back are they think their service is too expensive. More importantly, they think they're less convenient. So as independents, we're in the communities, we're in the general area, and that's why we see these vehicles more often after a warranty period. In fact, there was two of them in here today. You know, my warranty's over, and we had a preventive maintenance on a Volkswagen that was approximately $600 or $700. The dealer did not get that. Where I see some of the dealerships gaining ground, well, the reasons they're gaining ground is they've got how many recalls have been on every make and model. And I lost a $900 ticket to a client who is very good with us. We have no problem. I mean, his ticket sizes are great, but he came in and he said, oh, I had to go for a recall and they got me for $900. Okay. All right, win one for them. But is that a reason to worry? Well, yeah, I lost the sale. But in the same sense, the convenience, the consumer of today is all about convenience. It was convenient for him to leave it there. Whether or not that meant loyalty change is one thing. I don't discount any kind of survey. And Karim, you're right. I look at surveys all over. But I believe what we see when we think that the dealership has us over the barrel in technology, we probably could go back 30 years ago with the introduction of HEI, and the independents were all worried, well, I might as well throw the towel in now because the dealer is going to beat me up. And the dealerships are going, salivating, going, oh, I can't wait till all this gets here because it's all going to be mine, mine, mine. And it's never happened. I think sharp operators from the independent side will be able to analyze this data, consume it, make sense of it. And, you know, like we always do, we defend it. And, you know, we have a defense against it, I should say.
Greg, but back then, 30 years ago, the perception of HEI was not a high-tech thing. Although, yes, it was, and it was new.
It was different, right?
The high-tech stuff today is high-tech stuff.
Oh, it is high-tech stuff. There's no question. But with everything that comes our way, there is always a period of, say, 2 or 3 years where there is scarcity on the repair side, right? I don't have ADOS equipped service bays right now. In 5 years, I will have an ADOS equipped service bay. Why? Because the market will be there. Cars out of warranty within 3 to 5 years will be my prime market. So if I focus correctly on the 7 to 10 year or even the 5 to 10 to 12 year market, I'm sustainable and I remain relevant. I go back to the old practices. I'm not discounting any kind of competitive situation from any other player in the marketplace.
I think they've been bad enough for a while. So there was a consumer report survey that just came out, and it said that actually customers are more satisfied with the independent service market right now than they are with dealerships or chains, right? This came out in January. I got a couple of people email me this and they said, hey, good, independent shops, this is where people want to go. This is where people are satisfied. But as Kareem just pointed out, those dealerships are looking at the same thing and they just gained 3 points and we just lost 3 points, right? So although and then you're adding in technology, we ain't even gone there yet. But I think it's kind of concerning when the dealership actual market is shrinking. Over the last couple of years, the number of dealerships have actually shrunk. So here they are trying to figure it out. And there's some numbers that Kareem has that says they are figuring it out.
There's no question. They're closer to the solution than further away. There's no question about that. Okay. It's just a matter of how do we as independents keep up the same level. And, you know, it's cat and mouse. So where do we take our next stage to? What do we do next to compete with that?
I'd like to add one quick thing too, because you said something very interesting, Greg. You said, you know, we've seen these challenges in the past with the new introduction of technologies in cars, you know, whether it was in the, you know, 80s, late 90s. I think for me, there's a very different sense or feel for what's going on this time around. Karim mentioned, you know, this is high tech. I want to add something else. There's a high tech with a legislative umbrella on top of it that right now is a very gray area. And the reason I say that is because it's not just limited to automotive. It's pertaining to any industry that deals with data out of a car. And right now, a lot of customers are putting this in the same bag and thinking, oh my God, this is too complicated. I'm just going to go back to the dealership because they made the car, they know best. We as independents, to Chris's point earlier, you know, the dealerships have, you know, what is it, NADA, North American Dealership Association, mm-hmm. They can get together, they can subsidize these kinds of studies. What can we do as an industry to do similar things to create not only that kind of market research for us to consume as independent shop owners, but more importantly, we need to educate the broader, you know, general public. I think that's kind of been my wish. Again, I'm new to the industry, so it's hard to do. But I think that to me is where we could, by not being careful enough, I think we could really lose some serious ground on this new high-tech stuff.
I want to point out that I have been chastised by a customer when I said in all complete and 100% honesty that my shop and my guys are better than the dealership. I've got everybody ASC certified. That my shop, I train more than them, that we're more on top of technology than them. And she got offended. She got offended by me making that statement. And she said, are you seriously telling me that your shop is as good as the dealership? And I said, no, ma'am. I'm telling you, it's better. And she got mad. Yeah. So I agree with Kareem. Yeah. Like, how do we change that? Even though Consumer Reports is looking pretty good right now that we're changing that mentality, how do we convince them that we can tackle this technology? Greg, you're a technology guy. We're all geek guys here. I don't think ADOS, I think all of us understand what ADOS is and where ADOS and driver assistance, I think all of us are on top of that right now. How do we as an independent market look at that, right? Are there a lot of shop owners that are still saying, I don't know, not me, not too concerned about it?
Oh, there definitely are. There's definitely going to be attrition, just like you're seeing dealerships go through the attrition process. They're getting out. You know, we're selling out. Same thing with independents and chains. You'll see them close or change direction. Independents have to do the same thing. You know, you're looking for what you can do to remain relevant and then consider what your business entity is. I mean, there's multiple strategies to take in order to sustain a business. I mean, I look back on our 52-year history, and what did we have to do? We had to change with the times. Was the root? The root is always auto repair and service, keeping things going. Customer satisfaction, you know, what do we do? And we continue to do that. From the technology side and getting people to get to you, again, I go back to what we see in this report. Convenience was the number one issue why they didn't return. If you go deeper into the lower level of this thing, you'll see where the attitude of the presentation changes from saying where they go, well, you know, value is the important part. You got to sell the value. And then one of the solutions to get more people into the dealership was, hey, why don't you try these things like lower your prices, be competitive, run a competitive oil change price. So the report kind of starts off with things, and I'm not, Grim, it's a great thing. And there's a lot of great information. I just read it this way. That's all. This is what I am interpreting. So take it as me interpreting this solely, and this is my opinion. But I've been around long enough, as you guys have, well, Krim, you might be the exception, but other people who might be listening to this, is that we're not running scared. We have to be understanding and logical in our thinking that, yes, we're going to lose some market share. At some point, they're going to leave us. If they buy a new car, they're out the door to begin with. So, but we don't stop doing what we do. That's the key. If we're a quality organization, we'll remain a quality organization until we decide as owners, hey, you know what? I'm done. Here's the key. Someone else bought me out. I'm out of here. So I think that if we are able to continue growing, maintaining our presence, continue our marketing, even though that's an evolution from one platform to the next. We introduce technology. We share with what we know. We introduce our clients to the fact that, hey, I can work with your vehicle. I can do this. I can do that. I can take your technology. I can take your whatever. I can find a solution to you for you to raise confidence in me. If technology is technology and it goes from one platform to the next, the vehicle is a platform. So if we prove our merit and we prove our strengths in this kind of technology and what we're doing here, this kind of technology, we give a semblance of confidence back to the client going, oh, wow, okay. They helped me with this connection. They know my car. They know my platform. I'm going to give them a shot. And they're convenient.
I want to say amen, right? That's what I've been preaching, right? Tablets in the bays. If your guys are walking around with tablets, and I don't care if you're doing a digital inspection or not, Carm. If you just show your guy walks up with a tablet and he's pressing on some buttons, then I believe your consumer, your client's going to come in and say, wow, that's pretty cool. Right. I don't see a lot of guys with tablets in the bays. Something that simple.
And to jump in on that, you know, last week I had students from the local high school come in. And, you know, we're getting some ideas. They're like a marketing team that I just got. So I'm showing them around and showing them the tablets, the DVI solutions, and how we work within the shop. And the kids were kind of wide-eyed, but the instructors were even more blown away because they were going, you really do that? I go, yeah. I said, look what we do. I said, well, all reports are digital. You know, all my techs have one. We report back to the counter. We have our presentations. They were blown away. So, you know, we're really good at staying under a rock. We need to move the rock away and not be afraid to share our experience and our profession in any way possible. You know, and I could go on, but I just let me explain to you what my experiences are, because I'm glad I do this stuff. You know, I'm proud to be an automotive repair resource and center. I went to a meeting today, and I go to these network events, right? And I can tell you that I am the only automotive center that is in a mix of 200 people from all of Newcastle County in my surrounding area. Now, that's an advantage for me, because you guys know me, I don't stay quiet. I will, you know, don't be shocked, right? I know, right? So, but here I am, and I'm looking around, and I'm mixing up, I'm associating, I'm networking. I pick up, I don't know how many accounts, two or three accounts at every one of these meetings. And they're all leaders from the state. They're all leaders from businesses and everything like that. And not one colleague of mine is present. Nothing to promote our profession. There are builders, there are contractors, there are attorneys, there are doctors, there are professors, there are leaders from other industries. And I continue to wonder, and I continue to worry, that we don't get out enough to promote our own profession. We have leaders like yourselves here tonight. Carm, you're the voice of the profession, but we shouldn't lean on you, Carm, and no one should lean on each other to promote themselves and their profession in the local area. It's laughable in a sense, because I'm gaining market share without any other kind of content marketing or any social activity whatsoever. And I'm getting all the
word of mouth.
Word of mouth. How do you think?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. How do you think I wound up with a high school student team that's going to produce for free all of my marketing, digital, awesome, audio, and Chris, I just told Carm pre-roll here. They're even going to do augmented reality for me.
Nice.
Augmented reality. Why? Nice. Because I was out and I met the instructor. We've had a relationship for a little while. We connected 2 months ago at the same type of meeting. Do you know how valuable that is? Not only do I get to promote and take my wacky brain and work in different directions, but I get to work with kids and promote and tell them.
You know, you put your heart and soul into your work every day, but the automotive aftermarket, it moves fast. And staying competitive means staying up to date on the very latest training and new products. At APEX, the Automotive Aftermarket Product Expo, the training sessions are some of the best I've ever seen, and they all take place over a 3-day period, all under one roof. APEX training is geared toward shop owners, technicians, auto parts retailers, and warehouse distributors, and each year, APEX adds new programs to make sure you stay ahead. In 2018 alone, APEX added shop equipment and technology training and electric car and alternative fuel vehicle training. Now keep in mind, these sessions are taught by many of the top trainers in the industry. Mark your calendar now to attend APEX 2019, November 5th through the 7th at the Sands Expo in Las Vegas. To learn more, visit aapexshow.com. We have to duplicate what Greg is doing. And to me, really, with all respect, my friend, you've got a hell of a blueprint for everyone to follow. I am not sure everyone is going to join the Kiwanis and get involved with the Rotary and get out to the high schools that you have been involved in building over the years. But is it a great plan for 2019 and 2020 to do this? Yes. But here, let's try to get this episode to come out with some bullet points, some talking points, some action items that we can do today. I love to be a great listener, but when you guys motivate me, I have to say something. And so how do we promote ourselves in this high-tech thing? This may be a little, you know, tongue-in-cheek, but let me just throw this idea out at you and see what happens when I say it. A commercial or a tour of our place or a visit with a customer that reminds them, by the way, we get high on high tech.
I like that.
Yeah, we could do that. I like the idea. I think it's a good idea. I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head there, Carm. I think, you know, this idea of advertising, it's got to be part of a broader scope of a more strategic approach, right? And we need some sort of an umbrella to oversee it because different markets, different ways of messaging, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that's exactly what we need, because here's what I think is going to happen. I'm with you, Greg. I am 100% into this. I am not, you know, I am definitely not running scared. I will take on any challenge. Bring it on. I'm ready. Arms wide open. I'll embrace it. But I think what I'm thinking also is, how is this going to be used? You're going to start to see more and more of that negativity from the dealerships accusing us independents of not being able to do this kind of work. How they're going to do it, whether it's face-to-face when the customer is on their premise, whether it's advertising over the radio, whether it's pamphlets they go, you know, with mailings, whatever it is, they're going to start to take advantage of that very perception and make it into a reality.
We all have customers and they all visit our place X amount a day, X amount a week, X amount a month, X amount in the database. We want to explain to them that we're high on high tech. So when they're with us, one of the most important things we can do is to give them the we're high on high tech tour. And one of the things that I saw here was one of the reasons that people go back to dealerships, and there's a bunch of them. One of them was, I was introduced to the service department when I purchased the vehicle. Hey, come on, I want to introduce you to some people. Hey, I want to take you back in the shop. I did a great interview with a shop owner that takes people purposely through the shop and shows them the equipment that is being used in the shop. If it's not only a roller, it's a very neat shop, it's a very organized shop, it's a very clean shop, very proud to take people back there. It is a requirement, and it is so purposely rehearsed at every moment that the person is walking through, the signs on the wall, the purposes and the vision, and everything is there. If part of one of the tactics from the dealership is to introduce, why is it ours to tour? Because we're high on high tech. And somewhere along the line, we have to stop sitting back and thinking that we are the dealer alternative, which I really kind of love that line, but we have to be, you know, the dealer alternative, and like Chris says, better than the dealer alternative. And so this episode is not only about exciting us that high tech is so important and our customers don't have a clue. They need to know that we can service them. We can fit them in the car. We can teach them. What does the salesman do when you buy the brand new car? He walks you through the 5 to 8 minute obligation to show you what the dash is about. And you don't remember a thing, because all the way home, you're trying to make sure your favorite XM station's tuned in.
Now, I think there's classes that are somewhere from an hour to several hours to run through your car.
Absolutely. And why aren't we doing that?
Correct.
What a great thing. I know. Every one of my customers gets that, you know, starting with the DCI and explaining to them what we're doing and what we're capable of. I'm huge on providing them insight as to, you know, programming. We can do programming. And that is an anchor point. They're like, you can do what? Yeah, programming. Yeah, because your car has 120 computers. We're ready for it. And then all of a sudden, they're like, oh, wow, I didn't even know I had that many computers. And boom, you start. But, you know, I think that I'm totally in agreement with you, Carm, because it works. It does work. Now, how many other, you know, shop owners are doing this or can do this? That's the other thing. Can do this, you know, are they ready for it? That's one of the things we need to continue talking about here too.
I don't know if y'all know this, but one of my side businesses is a tech company in
no way
in my
no.
shops.
No, get out.
But in both my shops, I sell tech. I'm telling you, because customers don't understand how complex their car is, but when they start seeing tech in your shop and they see things as simple as tablets in your tech's hands or text messages to their phones or digital inspections delivered to their phones or no clocks where they're punching in and out, where everything starts becoming digital, then when they bring in that digital piece of equipment, they trust and they start building a much quicker trust than you'll ever understand. And the nice thing is there's a lot of dealerships who have not taken this approach. And I've read a couple articles about dealerships and they understand that there's a huge gap there that they could take in as well, right? So here's another place, the independent market, I think absolutely can beat them right now, is by there's a lot of technology out there that we can adopt and we can apply and show our customers that we are tech savvy. I know Greg and me have no problem with this. Every time we get up and talk in front of an audience, we talk tech. Now he talks Apple tech and I talk, I don't care tech, just right. Get tech in, I, you know, that's fine. He can bow to the Apple, but I,
no, I'm changing.
I know. Greg's tech, I'm tech. But I think it's a perfect opportunity, Carm, for shops. And I don't just preach it. I preach it because I see it in my shops every day. I don't preach technology because it's something I can sell. I preach it because I know it works, right? I see the difference of the shop that I just took over in July and when they had no technology. And now what's happened in the short 6 months that we've had this to transition customers to a whole new frame of thought. They're thinking, you've got to be kidding me. Wow, y'all actually have this ability to do all of these things that you do. And it's literally like taking fire to cavemen. And they're like, oh my God, like I didn't know this existed. Because they don't see it, right? So I definitely think there's an opportunity with independent shops to adopt that technology in-house.
I love what he just said, because the caveman mentality could be the perception of the customer about us and right. Not the dealer.
Yeah. I think so.
And it's very true, because I just give you an example. I did a very simple remodel, but I just wanted to keep clean lines, you know, very simple, clean, nice colors, et cetera, et cetera. And when the customers come in, they're like, oh, wow, I wasn't expecting that. Okay, great. And then when we talk, you know, I'm with them at the counter and I talk about what we do with the technology and so forth. Now they're completely blown away. They walk out of there and they're like, I had no idea whatsoever that a place like this could do this kind of stuff. I mean, that's just, you know, we have, the bar is so low already. You know, a little bit will go a long way. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to do a huge amount to just wow your customer today. To Chris's and Greg's point and Carm's, I think if you're using whatever technology you're using, leverage that, further it a little bit more in your shop, get your tablets to your techs, and just start leveraging that and show your customers that you care. You know, text your customers, for example, things that, you know, make communication more relevant in today's day. You know, I still laugh when people ask me to send them a fax. I let them know. I said, no, I will not send you a fax. I'm done with this 20 years ago. You know, wake up. So, you know, it's just like this mentality is like it's insane. But that's what it takes to move that needle a little bit. I think, yeah, we have a lot to offer. And I think every shop owner should get on board with that.
We have this most perfect message. We've got to get it out to the world in many forms and formats. And I know a lot of word of mouth, the podcast is out there. Can the people who will listen to this create an action plan and do something about it? And then will they tell someone else and someone else? And can we, you know, and to your one of your points, Karim, you know, maybe there are associations that are intimate with where their industry almost need to get on board with this.
I think so. I think these associations, I mean, you have to think about that public facing, you know, communication that it's not happening right now. And I think it would serve us just as much as, you know, everything else we do within the industry between shop owners and vendors and so forth. I think, you know, we need to be that outward looking industry that educates its consumers, because in the end, I mean, this is the kind of thing, you know, and again, whether this materializes or not, it's early enough that we can impact it. But these cars are coming out of warranty this year. They've started to come out of warranty this year and even more so next year. And where are these people going to go? I mean, I know my customers all around me, I am emailing them. I am doing mailers to keep them abreast of what we've done, what we're capable of, so that when they're out of warranty, we can, you know, they can swing by and we can let them how we can do it better than the dealer, blah, blah, blah. But can you imagine what if on top of that, there was a concerted effort nationally to educate the consumer about the independent, you know, shop market, and then for them to go and seek out that particular shop in their, you know, respective, you know, areas. I think that's a huge service to the industry.
And I love the idea of the independent rising, but I probably get shot for saying this, that look, I mean, Greg's going to, like you said, he's been around for 52 years. He's going to be around for 52 more. Greg's a savvy owner. Cream's a savvy owner. I'm sad to say it. There's just shops out there that I wouldn't want my mother-in-law going to. I like my mother-in-law, by the way. but there's independents out there that, we should say that independent's better, but we almost shoot ourselves in the foot if they go down to Joe's garage, who's working out of his house, which I'm okay with. I'm okay with him working out of his house to start. But is he doing a disservice by charging, you know, way less than he should, and he's using used parts, and you know, sure. And then we get into standards and everything else. So that's the other thing that scares me about the independent rising, is the independent really doesn't have a standard. We're dealerships.
No, I agree with you. I don't mean to cut you off, Chris, but I have a perfect answer for this one. We can set those standards. We can educate the customer to what it is that they should look for. I mean, you know, AAA does it when they want to make sure that you're a qualified shop. So why don't we do it with customers and tell them, look for these things. Don't get taken for a ride. Consumer Reports does it. Why can we do it? And say, no, this is what you, if you want to get that top-notch service, usually you want to look for these things. Boom, boom, boom.
Because there's 250 to 300,000 different interpretations of what's right.
That's above my pay grade at that point.
Yeah, I know. Me too. And I'm not being a naysayer, and I'm not putting salt on our ice cream.
No, but you're right,
here.
Because it becomes very difficult as, you know, you start saying, okay, well, you know, what's a standard? You know, how do we define a shop that's capable and not, basically, right? We got to start somewhere.
What if it starts with our new executive director at ASA, Ray Fisher? What if it starts with the fact that I call up Ray and I said, we've got this really cool idea. We want a little mini ad campaign, something very, very simple. You know, we want a 10-second video. We want some graphics to put up on social media that we get high on high tech. And, you know, we can movement. And maybe, just maybe, if you're looking for an improvement in an image and a consistent message, ASA at least gets out to their membership. And, you know, maybe people come into ASA just to become part of that campaign that they can run. ASA doesn't run the campaign. The local guy, you know, we have to be local. Mm-hmm. But maybe that kind of messaging, Greg, you know, and you would appreciate this because you're the geek marketer in the group here. If the message is consistent all over the country and the owner realizes, hey, I'm running this campaign, what can we do to back it up? Well, part of that campaign is that you really have to show your tablets and show your equipment and give shop tours and be sure that everyone who visits your shop realizes your capabilities.
I like it. I get high. You know, we get high on tech. It's great. It's a great little format. And I go back to what the oil companies used to do. They used to have national campaigns. What they did was, and what I believe in, and I mentioned this in my talk in Chicago. My thing is that I believe we need to run or be involved with the lifestyle of our clients. We get involved with the lifestyle from how they use tech to where they use tech and what they use it for, you know, from whether it's wearables to drivables. You know, if we get involved with that and take that direction, we create a huge barrier for any competitor. And that is my goal. You know, if you bring in somebody who has a 4x4 who muds, all right, great. I should know what they need to do. If I get a mom in a van, I know what their life is like. You know, I mean, I can see and look at things and observe and work with them. I think that, you know, lifestyle, working with their lifestyle, creates more opportunities for us in different dimensions, and we should take advantage of it. And I mean, that is where I'm heading. That's what I want to do, and that's what I believe in, and strongly believe in it. So, you know, tech is tech, but tech is all around us now. And I think if we, like, I go back to what I just said, proving our merits in one incident where, let me give you an example. A young lady was in here. Wasn't a young lady. It was an older woman. I call her young because she's younger than me. But she was there talking about having to get a document scanned out in time to meet this presentation. So, of course, yes, Chris, you're going to cut me up for this one here. But yes, it was an iPhone. And I showed her how to scan the document from her phone, right, with the new iOS. Well, you might have thought, I did. I just saved her presentation. I got it done on time. But she now understands that, hey, he understands my phone. I mean, you know, what else does he understand? You know, where does the technology, what's the difference between tech in the car and tech that you're wearing or you're using? It's a bigger environment and a bigger ecosystem that we can enter to prove ourselves. And it can cascade up to where we're now looked at as someone who has the knowledge to work with them. So it's a different path. I understand it, but I tell you that the more we get involved with the lifestyle of our clients, or at least understand, we go back to data. Guys, look at what the data that we collect already. Let's use it to our advantage. Let's not just give it away and let it be some benign type of situation we don't even look at. Analyze it. All right. Do they go to Starbucks? We can buy a Starbucks card and send it to them. We can text them the link to a Starbucks certificate.
Oh my God, you're such a geek.
Well, you can buy them a download on iTunes. You can buy them a gift card. There's multiple things that you can do to win their patronage, and their business.
I want to throw out an idea for shop owners too. And me and Greg had this conversation. So I read TechCrunch. I read it almost daily, right? And I think that Greg makes a good point that, look, you need to understand the technologies out there. And yeah, you need to read some of the other publications out there that are industry specific. But you should be logging on to TechCrunch daily or every couple of days, because there's articles about exactly what Greg's talking about, how Google, how they're putting memory on cars now, and right, and how they're changing the infotainment experience right now. And they're talking about driverless cars every other day, and they're talking about driverless fleets, and they're talking about driverless. And so there's a lot of things that don't really reflect in our industry, but then there's a lot of things that are. So I think that shop owners should be reading things outside of their industry. Now, when I challenged Greg with TechCrunch, he challenged me with Nat Geo. So now I've added Nat Geo. And it's funny because it goes back, and I'm like, Greg, I don't understand your mind here. But it does, because it goes to the human behavior. So Greg's very good with human behavior because he's reading about human behavior. I'm really good now with human behavior. Well, I'm getting better with human behavior, but I'm good with tech because I read tech, right? So I think we should probably broaden our horizons of what we listen to and what we read.
I think it's a fabulous, fabulous point. And you guys always motivate me. I'm listening to you and I'm starting to, I've always tried to be a grassroots person trying to, how do I get into the mind of my customer? And let me, can I throw you two more ideas of an ad campaign? You connect to your car's phone, we connect to your car's computer. Isn't that cute? And how about this? We're having some fun here. How about this? These are all free, by the way. I should trademark those.
You'll see them up tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, Greg, keeping with the idea of having that meeting and bringing people in and walk them through, the ergonomics of their car, all the new tech that's on their car. How about this? Do you know how your car's new tech works? We are high on high tech. Join us at our meeting. And so if you're going to put a Facebook ad or a Twitter or anything out, let it drive your purpose and what you're doing. And again, keeping in mind why people are going back to the dealers, it needs to be that subliminal message in your messaging, as you were saying, Kareem.
I need to clarify something, Carm. For 3 years now, I have been using the line, we are high tech. So I have it on my sweatshirts for my guys when they go out for lunch. It's on their back. People can see it. It's on my hats. It's on my, it's just associating high tech. You know, yeah, it says, I
want to stop you, Kareem, real quick. So his first T-shirt, and I'm going to let you finish this. His first T-shirt, though, on the front, it said, "We are high." And on the back, it said tech. So I had to tell Kareem, put it all on one side. So go ahead, Kareem.
True. True. Okay. And that was a long time ago. That was 3 years ago.
That was 3 years ago. That's when you first launched the campaign. And you sent me the T-shirt, and I loved it. But the problem was that everybody kept saying, "Oh, this guy must be super stoned right now."
So let me tell you something. Every time we seem to get together, we start at A. And we so quickly get to Z.
I had to put it there.
And then it's like coloring in the lines, right? We do the outline, and then we fill in the inside. I had a blast. This was great. You know, these things, these geek talks have just continued to, you know, you outdo yourself. So I know we're missing a few of our members of our team, but, well, they'll have to listen to see what they missed.
What they missed.
Thank you so much, Greg Buckley, Kareem Morsel, and Chris Clodier for Geek Talk 2.0 Part 3, man. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.